If you love your people really well, consistently, you earn the right to have the hard conversations. But I would say that, man, if you want to be the guy who kind of has power and wants to be the boss, first of all, you shouldn't be a pastor. That's not the posture of a loving pastor. But if that is your posture, pray that the Lord would soften you and humble you to learn how to love people first, to love people, to earn the right to have the hard conversations.
Welcome to The Glass House. Today we have some of our great friends from Colorado. Lindley, are you excited about this?
I'm super excited.
I am too. This is Mark and Jenna Halleck. And guys, tell us a little bit about yourself, what church you're at, and just a little bit about you.
Yeah, so we are, so good to see you guys, by the way.
Yeah, this is too fun.
So good to be together. So we're out, like I said, in Colorado, and we are at Calvary Church in Inglewood, Colorado, which is kind of a southern sort of suburb of Denver. And we've been here since, I was a youth pastor in Littleton for 8 years, but we've been at our current church since 2009. And it was a dying little Baptist church. And we God really called us to help revitalize this congregation. So we've been here. Tell them about our kids. We got a couple kids.
We do. We have a couple young adults, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So I'm Jenna, and our kids are Zoe and Eli. Zoe's 21. Eli's 18, getting ready to graduate high school. Zoe is a junior at Colorado Christian University, where I now work. We love CCU. We love the culture there. Rigorous academics, just awesome spiritual formation programs. It's like the best Christian university out there.
Wow. She's pretty pumped. Yep. She's pretty pumped about CCU.
Yeah, love CCU.
I can tell.
That was amazing.
Yeah, and we're so glad. I mean, Zoe made the choice, and then I was able to join the staff there. So it's been an awesome fit for us and for our family. And Mark's actually speaking at chapel next week.
Awesome.
So that's fun. Are all in with CCU.
That is so good.
Well, we have been in ministry the entire time we have been married, and the Lord has just been so kind over those years to grow us together and bring great staff and just deep friendships that have sustained us through a lot of challenging times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're excited to dive into that, but we have a few just get to know you questions.
Come on.
So we're going to ask this kind of rapid fire. So first of all, what is a Halleck guilty pleasure? So is this a food that you binge on if you're not in a good mood or what?
I mean, I've got a guilty pleasure I'm not sure my wife knows about.
Uh-oh, go ahead. It's confession time.
It's what's called the vanilla zinger.
Really?
Oh.
You know zingers? Really healthy snack. Kind of been around a while.
Like a cake thing.
I can't believe it. It's something I found later in life. It's a joy bomb. I love vanilla zingers.
Is it a joy bomb?
The equivalent of a Twinkie?
It's kind of like a Twinkie, but with some frosting. Wow. It's incredible.
Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Even healthier.
So that's the guilty pleasure, because I absolutely know I should not be eating it, but I just love it.
I think both CCU and zingers owe us some royalties on the show.
Yes. So
I'm just saying.
I think so.
All right, Jenna, what about you?
Oh, I mean, if we're going the food route, I would have to say Doritos.
Ah,
really?
Yes. Literally cannot keep them in the house.
Can you tell me what flavor, please?
The original nacho cheese.
The red.
Flavor.
Okay. The red, yes.
Classic.
Did you have another guilty pleasure you were going to say?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, well, there are pleasures that I don't feel are guilty at all. Like, I'll go to the spa, get a massage. I don't feel bad about that. So I hesitate to put that in the guilty pleasure category.
I understand.
Totally
I understand.
Okay, so next question, and this is a funny one. Do either of you have any scars with a funny story?
So I remember, when I was 5 years old, I'm in the church nursery. So I grew up in Wyoming. So part of it, I'm a lumberjack. I'm from Wyoming.
Yeah.
This is the kind of clothes we wear.
Come by naturally. But
I was in the church nursery, and I was showing off for everybody. I'm 5 years old. And they had all toys were kind of ghetto back then. Nothing was safe. We didn't know that, of course, but we played on. And so there was this slide. It was a metal slide indoors, keep in mind. And I remember going, man, check this out. I can go backwards on the slide. And sure enough, I went backwards.
In the nursery.
5 years old. I go down, and this thing is so fast. And I remember trying to catch myself. I turn around and I hit this cabinet, which, keep in mind, sharp corners were everywhere in nurseries in 1981.
They were not padded.
And it kind of blasted my head. And so I've got a scar on my head from that. So, again, kind of tragic, but
That is such an interesting topic, though. Like, I remember my elementary school playground had, like, monkey bars over concrete.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there was no safety whatsoever.
We had, like, big, giant jungle gyms on rock. I mean, you know, like you'd fall off and have rocks everywhere.
Mine was, I didn't have a scar from it, but I did, my only broken bone came from the merry-go-round.
Yep.
Yeah.
Flying off the merry-go-round onto the blacktop.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. Now, here's the deal. If you were to come to our church today, guys, you would see that we have not moved beyond 1956 in our playground equipment.
Okay.
Which we have a lot of young families who are regularly concerned about that.
Did you guys grow up with the slides that were like the rollers? Like you like roll down the slide and they all rolled with you?
Oh, yeah. Those little bars that were slides.
They rolled, but like you could easily get a finger like caught down in them and stuff.
Seriously.
I was just wondering if you had a roller slide there at your 50s building.
I do remember the metal slides outdoors that got up to probably 180 degrees and you're wearing shorts. Remember those
days? Right. Totally.
Okay. I just wondered.
Fry you.
Yeah. I think that's why Lindley only has three fingers on that one hand.
Oh,
that Jonesboro slide took them off.
Were you going to share any of your guilty pleasures or scar stories?
Nope, these are for you.
But unfortunately, we have to move on what we're really supposed to talk about on the show. Angie's like, come on, wrap this up. All right.
We
really wanted to ask you guys questions about a super important topic. I was just with some leaders in the Midwest, and we were talking about how important the staff is in a church, how it really is like the nucleus of a cell. Mm-hmm. If the nucleus is healthy, the rest of the cell tends to follow suit. But if the nucleus is not, then the rest of the cell is dying.
You should bring out your biology degree.
Yeah. You see that?
Wow.
I have a biology degree and I just applied it.
It was worth it.
So
every penny right there.
Yeah. Sorry.
Calvary, and I know, Mark, you've worked really hard at this, has a reputation of really being loyal and loving toward the staff. And we thought it'd be great to have you guys on here and just talk about how to love on your staff, how to build unity, what you've learned from success and failure.
Well, I want to start with the beginning. Like, how did that become a value for you guys? Has it always been a value, or did you have like a hard story that you thought, man, we gotta love our staff?
Mm. Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I would say this, like, you know, one of the things that we've always, you know, since Jesus saved me and Jenna, is, man, loving people. We're called to love God with our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love people. And if we don't get those two things right, we've kind of missed the mark.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to staff, I've always felt like part of my calling is to love the heck out of our staff, just everybody. And part of that, there's a lot of things that goes with loving your staff, right? And we'll talk about this, but encouragement is a huge value for us. Encouragement, relentless encouragement of people. So you can't over-encourage anybody.
Nope.
And as you said, Ben, so many folks are discouraged. And so encouragement is huge. And so I was thinking about this. I think, like, for me, honestly, from being young in ministry, I was a youth pastor for a long time, which involved building youth staffs of volunteers. And then obviously coming to Calvary, is, you know, two things I was thinking about. One is honestly the model of Jesus and just how he was with his disciples. You have these different individuals, and throughout the Gospels, you just see Jesus through the lens of a leader, showing great patience, kindness, grace, humility, servant leadership, all these things. And so even if you just study Jesus alone with his disciples, I think you would find the ideal model of how to lead your staff, right? Yeah. The other thing, though, I would say is I played basketball all through college. And so here's the truth. I had some coaches that were not very good at building culture on a team, right? Yeah. And played for some teams that were disunified and there was no clear vision and it was awful. And then I played for some coaches that were unbelievable in terms of motivation, in terms of encouraging, in terms of knowing each player as an individual.
Yeah.
The worst coaches I played for who coached everybody the same, right? So I played in college. Our coach was a screamer. He was a Bobby Knight screamer. He coached all of us that way. Some of us responded well to that. A lot of us didn't respond well to that. And so one of the things just I learned in my basketball life is, man, how you got to lead individuals as well as the team. Does that make sense? So there's like a macro level leadership, but there's a micro level leadership. It's the same thing in shepherding. You know, there's a macro congregational shepherding that we have to do, but these are individual sheep.
That's really
good. So who are they? And so anyway, those are two things that I would say for me have really kind of shaped my understanding of leadership and applying it to the local church.
Well, and really I would say too, just being available, you know, being a leader who is available to your staff, open communication, knowing where you're going, you know, and that you're going there together. I think those are all really important things. And the only thing I would add is just, I think, breeding a culture that we celebrate wins. You know, we celebrate what God is doing in each individual role, but also as the whole, as the church, advancing the gospel.
Hey, Jenna, for you specifically being the pastor's wife, but also working, I mean, you have two kids, you're working at CCU. Are there expectations on you, or does this just kind of flow out of you as well? Are you two paired well in that encouragement, hospitality, those type things are enjoyable to you?
Yeah, well, they're super enjoyable, actually. I mean, I am extroverted by nature, not as much as this guy, I don't think.
I don't know. I don't know. The older we get, I'm wondering.
But it's something that we have. You know, the Lord, I think, in his kindness, brought us together, and we do fit really well together. I think we balance each other out, and I do really enjoy serving and loving our wives and their families in a varied ways. You know, it has looked different over the years with different roles and certainly age and stage of children. Like for other pastors' wives who are listening to this, like I would want to say it's okay if you're not super involved with the staff, but think about ways that you can be. Think about ways that you can encourage the other pastors and leaders. Think about ways that you can invest in the wives in a way that works for your season and life stage.
That's good.
Lindley
and I, when we planted in Denver, you know, when you're first planting a church, you guys know lots of stories about this, but it's just so intense. You know, you're always meeting to try to plan the next block party or the next. And we realized that our staff were really just transactional, and we were just and so we started adding some fun things to the calendar, and we saw an almost instant transformation in just trust. The joy of the church began to feel lighter, and we learned a valuable lesson. Like, you really can't cut corners on just informality, letting people hang out together and experience one another as human beings.
One of the things that we tried actually last year, because we had noticed, like, as the staff grew and elders and deacons, was we just didn't all even see each other on a weekend at the church, right? And so we tried to create spaces that were really casual. We actually called it happier hour at the Hallecks. And so a few times throughout the year last year,
just soda.
But happiness.
Hey, man, happier. We're proud Baptists, man.
All right.
But the idea was, you know, pick up your kids from school and then come straight over. No meal, just, you know, some light snacks and drinks, all family friendly.
Okay, talk about this a little bit more. You said pick them up from school. So when would you do this? Like what time of day and stuff?
Yeah, like 4 o'clock.
It was usually 4 to 6. And so literally, and you know, Colorado, you know, I mean, Colorado's crazy. Denver's a big city. People are doing a million things. And so we just built this into the rhythm that to come over to our house, real easy. We're just going to hang out. We're going to laugh together. We're going to celebrate wins, and we're going to pray, and that's it. And it's and so informal. But again, most of our families were able to make it. And if they couldn't make it, it's not like they had to come to every one. But we did this regularly, and just found it to be a really good time just to be together outside. And there's no ideal time, but that time worked best for our leaders for the most part.
Yeah.
And man, it's been awesome. I mean, it's really an environment we didn't have before. That's really, I think, helping us cultivating deeper friendship. But our staff now is not huge. We have 7 full-time staff. We have 3 or 4 part-time staff. And then we have a number of deacons and we have a pastor elders. And so we tend to do a lot of things with that group. So our staff, we're together on Wednesdays, just with our staff. Monday nights with elders. And then deacons meet once a month. And so what we've just found is whenever we can get those three groups together, there's a synergy, there's an excitement. I feel like to lead our church well, all three of those pieces have to be on the same page, staff, deacons, and elders. And so we work really hard, again, to kind of see when we talk about staff, there is staff, but in a sense, it's all of our key leadership, I would say. And that's worked really well for building a culture at our church. I've seen just in some churches, you have deacons over here doing their thing, and the staff's over here doing their thing, and the staff aren't really sure what the deacons do, and the deacons don't really know what the staff does. And then if you've got pastor elders, mm-hmm. they're kind of in between. And so I think a unified leadership in the local church really is contingent on those three groups being completely aligned, love each other a ton, lots of joy, clear vision.
I'm going to dig into the details really fast here with Jenna, because yep. so many of our listeners are pastors' wives, and so many of them are uncomfortable with hospitality. Mm. And so if you could speak here into, is this fancy? I mean, do you set out like paper plates and Cokes and chips, or is it like... is it really nice things? I mean, just let them off the hook if you feel like this could be done very easily.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I feel like you have to do something that's attainable, right? So yeah. you have to figure out what works for you. Honestly, if you have the budget, I'm not opposed to having something catered, you know, having something brought in. I don't feel like I need to do homemade stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I am one who enjoys hospitality. I do like a good theme. Anybody yeah. like a good theme? So I did try to do some of those things, but it was very simple. It was paper goods. It was drinks and easy snacks on the counter, grab and go, because it also was also open house style. And so we felt like we want you to come, even if you can only come for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Don't feel like you need to stay the whole time. So very casual in that sense. And okay. activities for the kids, a couple things to just keep them busy. And again, we're just in a different stage of parenting. So I had to be a little bit more intentional about that because I don't have littles. So making sure that I had things to keep the littler children busy and entertained so that we could actually visit. But it was really fun to get to see families all together, right? Because yeah. again, we don't always get to see that during mm-hmm. our weekend mm-hmm. worship services. And so creating that space, I would say to any wife who would goes, oh, I like that idea, but I'm not really big mm-hmm. on, you know, hosting at my home. Maybe you do it in the church building. Mm-hmm. Maybe you find a space. Yeah, home. One yeah. of the other yeah. spouses is really gifted yeah. at that. And you can just support mm-hmm. by yeah. showing up and maybe sending some evites or whatever the case mm-hmm. may be. So yeah, I would never want anyone to feel any pressure. And again, this was like a new idea that we had, and we've been at this for almost 25 years. So there's been a lot of things that we've done over the years
yeah.
with depending on the season. So we're all about, like Mark said earlier, mm-hmm. trying different things and meeting a real need for Great. The staff.
Yeah. You know, the church, the last church I served in as a youth pastor, we had a great example of a church culture where the pastor's wife was not expected to be a traditional pastor's wife, right? And so where you're playing the piano or you get whatever. And so part of the culture we wanted to create at Calvary for pastors' wives was to be themselves, you know, to be who God's made them to be. And whatever those gifts are, there's no expectation. There's tons of grace. We just love you. We want to help you be who God's made you to be. And so if you are hospitable and you love that, awesome. If that is not your thing, awesome. Mm-hmm. Who are you? Who has God made you to be? Because what we know is if a pastor is going to thrive, their wife has to thrive. It's back and forth. And so I think this old school idea of these expectations on a wife, I don't know where we got that idea. Not from scripture. mm-hmm. I think what we want is to help everybody flourish in who they are in Jesus. And that includes our pastors' wives. And I think we have to lead the charge as pastors to create a culture where they flourish. And I think Jenna, she's very gifted with hospitality and she's great. Some of our other pastors' wives, man, that's not their thing. And that's yeah. totally okay, you know? And so I think that's just important to say because mm-hmm. I think that's Absolutely. Really key in staying encouraged.
do you guys have any other special traditions that you've done with your staff? You said you've tried different things over 25 years, so share something else.
Well, I will say one thing I wish had become a tradition, but we did one time with our staff that was super meaningful, was we did a family camp together. Huh. I mean, this might have been a decade ago, but we went for a week, right?
It was a full week.
And again, it was the whole family, everybody together. And that was just, I mean, it was bonding as a staff. So maybe someone who's listening, who's like, gosh, we need to just find that way to unify, cast vision, bring everyone together, value our families as a whole. Mm-hmm. I would highly recommend we should do that again.
Yeah. I mean, that was great. I mean, we've got like, you know, we've got an annual staff retreat, which is awesome. We go into the mountains for a few days, just being together. You know, there's going to Rockies games. I mean, you guys know. I mean, so it's kind of like what Ben was saying. I just think we want to play together a lot and just have fun.
Yeah.
And that really is what our staff is. I think if you were to come in and say, you'd say, these guys are like friends. They like really, this is like real. But I think we all of us work hard to see that that's reality. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
That's really good.
Well, and for the crafty pastor wife listening, one thing that I started doing when we finally had more staff than just Mark was I started making a Christmas ornament every year that I would give to the staff. And now it's for the elders and deacons and their families as well. But just a way, it's kind of like putting a marker on the year. Like we did another year together, mm-hmm, friends. Like, mm-hmm, this is exciting. We want to commemorate that. And so something along those lines, if for those that are crafty, I'm not claiming to be particularly crafty, but that was something that's just been a tradition.
It's really cool. Yeah, it's really cool.
And it's a good mile marker, you know, over the years.
Mark, have you seen the movie Moneyball?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You know how Brad Pitt, the coach, he won't ride on the plane with the players?
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, he's going to have to trade them. So he can't get emotionally attached to the players.
Yeah, yeah.
How have you balanced, like, being a friend to your staff, you know, having over your house, your pals, but you also, at the end of the day, are their boss? Like, how have you two handled that as a couple, where you've had to have a hard conversation with a staff member? Yeah. Like, what? Walk us through that.
That's a great question. And there's a real tension there. Just is. I mean, there's a real tension there. I would say, you know, I think most guys err on one of two sides. I think there's two ditches. I think one is the ditch of you're just one of the buds, and they don't really see you, honestly, as the leader. And that has problems. The other ditch is the guy who really distances himself from the staff, doesn't get emotionally attached, and therefore doesn't really win the hearts of his staff.
Correct.
And so I would say this is a real tension. I think you have to take a risk in this area. I think loving people's a risk, you know, putting yourself out there.
For sure.
And fully giving yourself. I mean, I know this. I don't think our staff would not be what it is in terms of the unity, the joy, if I was holding back. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like I've got to set the tone of love, encouragement. I'm all in. I love you guys. At the same time, and I think this helps too, again, you know, depending on the polity of your church, we have 8 pastor elders. We'd say pastor elders are the same office. And I serve as the lead pastor elder, but we are truly a plurality. So I'm really a first among equals, and that's how we function. I joyfully submit to these other 8 men all the time. So it's not like Mark Lee like is the dude in our church. And that affects even the pulpit. I love preaching. I only preach 50% of the time intentionally. I don't want this church to be about Mark and my personality or whatever. I want the elders to lead this church. This is Jesus's church. So anyway, in saying that, I do think there's a distinction in some ways in my elder role and staff role. And so the church has hired me as the lead pastor elder to oversee the staff and to serve as a pastor elder. And I think that distinction has been helpful. So it's not just Mark the boss, it's the elders. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So many ways we run a lot of things through our elders. So it's not like, and part of that I think is to protect not only me, but to protect our staff and to protect our people. The last thing that we want at Calvary is a culture where there's one dude who gets all the glory and one dude who has all the power. And I think if that's going to happen, you have to create systems and teams including pastor elders, where there's a lot of accountability. And so, you know, I heard Mark Dever say years ago, he said, man, if you're a lead pastor, and let's just say you're really gifted and you're a good communicator and you're kind of a dynamic personality. He said, you've always got to be working to protect your people from you. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing that and going, man, that is so true. And that's why humility is the number one value in our church, humility and love. It is, how are we constantly trying to become less so that Jesus might be more and that others around us might be elevated above ourselves? And so anyway, all that to say, at the end of the day, to answer your question, it's a tension. And there are times as part of my role where I've got to have hard conversations. But I will say this, and this is true just in pastoral ministry. If you love your people really well, consistently, you earn the right to have the hard conversations. Mm-hmm. And I think even just recently, we just went through our annual process of goals and evaluation. And we do that. We try to make that not a scary thing, but a joyful thing. But every year, there's part of my job, and it's not just once a year, but is to just speak truth into these guys and gals. And what I found is if the rest of the year, I'm encouraging them like crazy, I love them like crazy, they're much more open to hearing critique and hearing if concerns that I have or whatever. But I would say that, man, if you want to be the guy who kind of has power and wants to be the boss, first of all, you shouldn't be a pastor. Yeah. That's not the posture of a loving pastor. Hmm. But if that is your posture, pray that the Lord would soften you and humble you to learn how to love people first, to earn the right to have the hard conversations.
I think it's hard. I think when you're a preacher and people are like, hey, I brought my friends to hear you preach this week and you didn't preach. Like, why did you have that guy preach? Like, it's hard to say, hey, we intentionally chose a guy that's not as good at preaching this week.
That's right. Exactly. That's right. And that's, dude, you just named our church.
Yeah.
And what we've just come to lean into, and I have this conversation a lot with people, is we want to be the kind of church where you fall in love with the faithful preaching of God's word, not the preacher preaching the word.
Really good.
And so we take it seriously. We've got very gifted preachers. But that pulpit isn't Mark's pulpit. That's Christ's pulpit. And so you've got to lead in a way that becomes a thing. And I think most people in our church would say now, but it's taken, you know, a long time. Whoever's preaching, praise God. One of our pastor elders is preaching, and our pastor elders love us, and they shepherd us, and they've been called to preach.
That's good.
But it's something you got to always fight, and you got to fight pride in yourself, right?
100%.
Because in my pride, I'm like, man, I can't believe I should be up there. That family would stick if I was preaching today. You know?
Totally.
And you're just like, man, Halleck, you're ridiculous, man. Like, just so prideful. And that's where it's just trust in the Lord. He's the king, man. This is his church, not mine.
That's really good.
So if I'm on staff at your church, and you said you guys spend Wednesdays together, we come into staff meeting. Are there things you do every week to encourage the staff, or is it just kind of flow out of you?
So here's how it works for us. So basically, 9 to noon is the staff time where we're all there. Because, again, we have a culture at our church. We're not all in our offices all the time. We're out with people all the time. I would rather people be out, honestly. But on Wednesdays, we're all together. And so basically what that involves is our staff meeting, which is 1 hour. And I would say, now again, the vibe, Lindley, which is such a good, the encouragement thing, is honestly, it's how I feel about my role on Sundays. I'm the chief greeter, man. I can't expect our church, if I'm not hugging on people, loving on people, and I feel that way with our staff. So I want to hug everybody on our staff before they sit down. You know what I'm saying? So they're coming in. They're getting a big bear hug.
Mark Halleck hug many times.
Big hug. I'm a big guy, so I can just kind of grab them.
It's epic.
Right out of your lungs.
Yeah, epic.
I just grab them. But then we come in as a staff, and the first thing we do every week, which is just fun and kind of stupid, is we this or that. And so basically somebody's in charge. So like this week it was like, ice cream without bananas or ice cream with bananas? Like, would you put bananas on there or banana? And it gets heated sometimes. I mean, this, we take this stuff seriously.
It's an important topic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I
have very strong opinions about that.
That's anyway, right. That's right.
That's
right.
A strong no. We,
yeah. But anyway, you know, we do something fun like that. And then we go through usually the basic stuff, schedule, key events coming up. And then we always want to celebrate wins. You know, Jenna had mentioned that. And that's super encouraging. And one of the things I always want to emphasize is every win in the kingdom is a big win. There aren't big wins and little wins, right? And so, because you can go, oh man, you hear these great stories about, man, this guy led five people to Jesus. And man, I just had a conversation with my neighbor about going to church sometime. And what I want to say is, man, both of those are big wins. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just celebrate wins and the work of God's grace anywhere. And so we always spend time just celebrating. And as we're celebrating, we're encouraging, you know? So Lindley shares how, man, she started this Bible study with a few friends or whatever that aren't believers and didn't go so well, but, you know, they did show up. And man, I want you to hear that is awesome, Lindley. That's incredible. The Lord's using you. That takes guts. That takes courage. Mm. And I want others to, you know, come alongside you. So that kind of thing's very intentional to celebrating wins. And then for an hour, we have just time to be together. So if there's side meetings or just hang out with each other, and then every Wednesday for 11:30 to 12, we just go pray in the sanctuary together. So trying to hit fun, encouragement, also just time together, maximizing that, and then seeking the Lord together. I think all three of those pieces, I think, help cultivate health in the staff.
Really good.
You know, I would say this, and I don't know if we want to go here, but I was thinking about just some of the values that we have as a staff.
Sure.
And I don't know if it would be helpful just to briefly hit those, because I think
great.
I would say this is what kind of keeps us, I think, focused and steered in the right direction. I also think these are things that if you're listening right now, you're a pastor and you're trying to figure out, man, how can we cultivate some intentional values? I think I'm just going to offer the big five for us that I think are very simple. There's nothing, you know. So these are values for our staff as we work and minister together as a team. First one is cultivating Christ-like humility. So again, humility is huge. We're called to serve, and it's a joy to serve. And Jesus is the hero. We're not the hero. And so I want to reiterate that over and over again. By God's grace, I need his help, but I want to help model that kind of Christ-like humility. And we would say joyful humility. Like, humility isn't a burden for the Christian. It's a joy to walk in humility. Number two is just encourage one another like crazy. We talk about that all the time. Be huge fans of one another. Help one another reach goals. Like, how am I helping you get wins? But verbal encouragement is a real value in our church culture. And I don't really hold back on that. And I know for a lot of people, that's weird at first. And that's why we talk about it a lot. And it's like, listen, man, if you're in Christ, you've been remade to be an encourager and to speak life into people and to build people up. And it's a joy to do it. It's like Christmas every day, man. You're giving presents to people and encouragement, and you're lighting them up. And so encourage one another like crazy. A third one is just, we just call it keep trying stuff. Just keep trying stuff. We're going to try stuff and we're going to fail all the time. But we want to be a culture that's always trying new things. And that's true in our church. That's true. We have a family of churches. We've planted and replanted churches out of Calvary over the last several years. And that's the mindset. It's, man, if we stop trying stuff, we're not going to do crazy things for Jesus. That's like good. It takes risk.
I love that.
But I would say number four that goes along with a culture of trying stuff is showing tons of grace. Show tons of grace to one another. Because we're going to fail. We're going to fall short. And so as a team, as we're encouraging each other, we're also going to blow it because we're sinners and we're selfish and we're going to have bad days and we're going to have bad seasons. And so how can we exemplify the gospel with one another in reminding ourselves that as we've been forgiven, we're called to forgive others. And so a grace culture is so huge. I will say this, you know, a lot of churches, I'm oversimplifying, but the more I work with churches, and Ben, you see this too, I think churches oftentimes have one of two cultures, a fear culture or a grace culture. And a fear culture is where people literally are afraid to do anything. They're afraid of the posture of the leaders, whether they say it or not, is why should I let you do that? Why should I let you? Versus a grace culture is how can I help you do that? God's put that on your heart. You're gifted for that. Mm-hmm. We want to be a how can I help you? What do you need? And that's a grace culture. You know, you're going to blow it. And that's okay. And what I've found is, man, people come alive. People come alive in a grace culture. And then the fifth one we've already hit a couple times is you've got to celebrate wins all the time. You've got to just celebrate what God is doing, identifying evidences of God's grace in people, and identifying God's grace and his work in the church. And so those are five things, real simple, nothing complex, but those would serve, I think, as the lifeblood in many ways of our staff and the joy of serving as a staff.
Really good. Hmm. Those are great values, man. I'm going to steal those.
When you talked about a grace culture in a church like that, is there anything that you don't tolerate on your staff? Yep. Of course, obviously, there's serious things, but just behaviors that you're like, man, we're not going to do that.
Yeah. Mm. Man, that's a really good question. Here are a couple things that definitely come right to the top. One is a lone ranger mindset doesn't work with us. We're a team. So I get that we're not all extroverts. We're extroverts and introverts, but that's different than, man, leave me alone. Just let me do my ministry and let me do my thing. That doesn't work with us. Like, we're a team on every level. And so that won't work on our team. A second one I would say is just a critical spirit, honestly. And part of that is maybe how I'm wired. You know, jokingly, we talk about joy suckers in the church, you know, just suck the joy out of you. And then that's not good for anybody. It's really difficult if they're on your staff, just a critical spirit. That's not the same as being someone who is critical in healthy ways, right?
Right.
We want that. We want people to be able to look at a program or something and evaluate it honestly. But I mean that critical spirit.
Yep.
That's just negative in the room. Everybody's a little nervous about, you know, what are they going to say? And there's a real lack of warmth. That just doesn't work in our culture. It just doesn't. So, I mean, either what happens is if you're kind of a critical person, this is true in our church too, to be honest, you're either going to catch the joy of the Lord or you're just going to get so annoyed with joyful people that you're going to leave. So either way, but I would say a critical spirit, we won't. And then here's the other thing I would say, the last one I would say, and you guys get this. One of the things we've had to really lean into, especially over the last several years, is the importance of being present, of being present in meetings, being present with people. And so technology, we kind of have to be, pretty relentless with, you know, let's shut off our phones, you know, no laptops right now. We need presence. We need to be together. We need to be here and actually be here. And so that's one of the things I've had to confront, honestly, in staff, is when they start slipping into this, you're in a meeting with somebody and you're talking about something really important and this dude's checked out doing whatever, that we just won't tolerate that. And part of that is because we love you and you're part of the team. Like, we need everybody on board here. So those are a few things, Lindley, that I would say are negative behaviors that again suck the life out of a team. You know,
well, and I
if
would
you
say
don't address them. And
as
so
a compliment
you got
to you, Mark, a big part of that too is that you're not a church that meets all the time, as a staff. So when you do meet and you're not out with people, it's important to really pay attention.
That's a great point. That's right. Yeah, your time is so limited with each other.
Yeah,
and it's just disrespectful. You know, it's like. I want people to feel really respected and valued, no matter who you are, right, on your staff. If it's, even our part-time staff, I want them to feel as valued as our full-time staff.
That's
and I
really
think
good.
We've got to set an example.
There's two things you guys have said that I want to highlight, one for you, Jenna, and one for you, Mark. I've always said this with Lindley, our relationship changes the day that someone steps into our house. I don't know what it is, but once people have been in your home, and it doesn't even have to be a cleaned up home. They've just seen where you live.
Yeah.
There's something about the relationship that goes to the next level just by default.
Totally.
So I know not everybody can do that and not everybody can have everybody over to your house, but the fact that, Jenna, you'd open up your home to let people just come in and see you know, how you live, where you live, I think it really matters. I really do. Mm. Second of all, Mark, I think it's really commendable that you have a culture where you encourage people to not be in the office. Mm. I just have seen so many leaders try to control office hours and dictate when people need to be in and out. I've just not seen that work. What really seems to work is a culture where, like, we're about people. So as long as you're getting your work done and your relationships are healthy,
totally,
we're really happy that you're out there in the trenches having coffee with people. That's better than being in here.
Amen. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right. You made a good point there. That means you've got to be lower, less control, more trusting of the Lord, more trusting of people. And again, if you're leading well and you're loving well and you should be able to trust your people to do what they've been called to do. And they come alive. That's the thing. I want them to be alive, man. I want them to be passionate about what they do. I don't want them to dread what they do.
That's awesome.
You know, our son battled cancer when he was 13.
Okay.
And so part of this is how do you cult when your child, a suffering child in ministry? And so, but we want to just share from the staff how our staff came alongside us.
Awesome.
In that time.
Well, yeah, like Mark said, I mean, Eli, our son, was suddenly stricken with a really aggressive cancer back in 2018. And we were so blessed by our staff, our friends, you know, who dropped everything, were at the hospital with us day, night, didn't matter. They were there even throughout treatment. And in the end of treatment, when he got to ring the bell, you know, there are staff that were there that not just because they were staff, but because they love us and they love our son. They love our family.
Yeah.
And that was just a time where, you know, we can sometimes feel like as the lead staff, we're the ones who are giving to people. You know, we're always looking for those opportunities and needs. But we were just so humbled to be able to be the recipient of that kind of care and love and just Christ-like service, and our staff stepping up and putting things in place that also met practical needs for our family. But just we knew we were being prayed for. We knew that things at the church were going to be fine. We didn't need to worry about what was happening at Calvary. We could just focus on making sure that Eli was going to survive and thrive through that season of suffering. So we just, I don't know that there's any way you can ever properly thank people for the way they've come alongside you in those times. But I would just even use this as a chance to shout out to those, I mean, Steve and Adam in particular, and Tim are the ones who come to mind that were there with such regularity, and just supporting us through that. So to be rallied around, I mean, we have felt that in the church, and we want nothing more than any other staff who would go through that kind of season to feel that same kind of support and rallying and just know that that's the body of Christ. Yeah. You know, it's how we're supposed to love each other.
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. So we've talked a lot on this podcast about loving your staff. You need to let your staff love you. That's just as important. And I think that's what we learned in our that trial with our son was when you are at your weakest, and man, I was at my weakest. I felt like, man, if Satan wants to take Mark Halleck out, this is it. You take my son out of the blue, my son that I love more than anything. And I mean, I was broken, man. And we were all broken. But I mean, I've never experienced a darkness like that, a depression like that. And I had nothing to give. I mean, I can remember literally crying out to the Lord as we were there, you know, we thought we were going to lose Eli. Now, praise the Lord. I will say this. He made it through. He's 5 years in remission. So we praise God.
Awesome.
But I can remember going, I don't know, Lord, if I'll ever be able to preach again. Like I can't imagine having the emotional strength to preach again. And I remember bringing that to our staff and crying with our staff in my lowest moments. And in return, I got nothing but grace and love and encouragement and prayer. And Jenna, the same thing. And that carried us through a full year. I mean, it was a full year of deep pain. And so again, my point in sharing all that is, as you're cultivating a culture it's not just you doing it for others. It's creating a culture because you need to be cared for as much as anybody else, especially when tragedy hits that you're not expecting. So just want to share that as just really, one of the sweet ways our staff came alongside us in our pain and really ministered to us. And we're so grateful for that.
So good.
I want to lead with that. I want to help our staff know this is not a duty. This is a delight. It's a delight to serve Jesus in the local church. And for a moment, even on cranky days, man, we've got so much to be thankful for. God is so good. This is a blessing. So
you guys have been awesome. Thanks so much for all the stories, the encouragement, the joy. I feel like I got hugged through the screen, Mark. Go ahead, put your arms out. Well, thanks for being on the show, and we'll see you guys again soon, okay? The Glass House is brought to you by Lifeway. It is produced and edited by Angie Elkins with help from William Hall. Sound engineering by Donnie Gordon. Artwork by Heather Brzezinski, and photography by Rebecca McVeigh.